Absolutely. But think about it. As little children, we believe in the game of make-believe, that if you can believe you can make it happen. And why not? Now, I love that you call your podcast The Brave Table, because what I love is the word courage. Courage comes from the root cor, heart, and it means to go forward with your heart in your mouth at times of doubt, fear, and uncertainty.
Wow. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of The Brave Table. I'm your host, Dr. Neetha. And if this is your first time tuning in, wow, you are in for a treat. And if you're returning, welcome. You've arrived to your destination, your oasis, to be all things just a little bit more brave, brave in your actions, in your relationships, and in your life. And today we've got a brave episode for you. I am bringing the one and only queen that I had the pleasure to meet through another dear friend of mine and actually mentor. And this woman has literally had so many different seasons of shifting, of transitions through motherhood, through corporate, through starting her own ventures. And it is none other than the incredible Carolyn Buckluse. She is one of America's most respected and accomplished voices on women's leadership and their relationship with power. If you've ever struggled for power, or perhaps maybe trying to be seen in a corporation or trying to have your voice seen, maybe even in your family or in friend circles or even at the table, this is the episode. This is the episode that you should be sharing with your friends. This is the episode you should be sharing with colleagues. This is the episode you should be sharing with your female counterparts. Now, she is the author of the recently published epic, The Women's Power Play book, which became an immediate bestseller in its first week. Carolyn has a long been advocate for healthcare innovations, cultural inclusivity, and women's empowerment through her work with some of the most well-respected companies like Ernst & Young, Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, United Health Group, and GE. She is a gifted longtime strategist, and she's an executive coach. Carolyn has spent the last four decades, and I say four, yep, of her career building a highly effective culture, businesses, full teams, and leaders, both in the public and private sectors. Now, she's had such a fascinating journey from a diplomat in the old Soviet Union to a Wall Street banker to a healthcare futurist. Throughout her entire career, Carolyn focused on helping courageous leaders make the difference that they dream of. A champion for women leaders now, Carolyn was appointed by New York City's Mayor Bloomberg to the New York City Commission on Women's Issues and served as chair of the New York Women's Foundation and was named Woman of the Year in 2012 by the Healthcare Business Women's Association. Now, Carolyn co-wrote several articles for Harvard Business Review, which most were republished in 2019 in HBR, Harvard Business Review's must-read series on women's leadership and diversity and inclusion. Her writings have also been featured in Inc. and the Huffington Post, and she has served as an adjunct professor at the Ivy League, Columbia University, for a decade teaching women in power, and is now a featured speaker every year at Berkeley's Business School Women's Executive Leadership Program. Whew, today, she's an executive coach and keynote speaker. Carolyn uses her proprietary decade game to coach some of the world's most remarkable women today in business, civic society, and philanthropy to live their purpose and discover their destiny. Now, I don't have to say any more about her. I was just so blown away when I got introduced to her and just the legacy she's been able to leave. Now at 70 years old, she is seriously an icon among so many industries. And I'm so glad you are just going to love this episode. You are going to love learning around all of the topics we go into. And she shares some pretty interesting moments from when she was a child, as we get into how she became the woman she is today and what has prompted her to really stay in the field of leadership and her passion for really serving women and what we can do differently now in this stage and season of the lives that we are in motherhood, and how to actually balance that with such a rigorous career that she has built and so much more. So if you are in a season of transition, if you are a season of maybe thinking about what your next decade can look like, this is the episode for you. So here we are this week, bringing on Carolyn Buck-Luce to the Brave Table. Carolyn, how are you today?
I'm great. Thank you. Looking forward to the holidays.
Oh my goodness. Yes. And so I want to get this party started with you because you have such a zest for life. You have this book, Epic. It's one of the words that I say so much. And tell us a little bit about your journey into designing a life that is epic, because I know that many times, depending on different stages and seasons of life for women, it's sometimes hard to even think that. And you do this with such intentionality. You take women through these epic journeys to declare it within themselves. So I want to unpack and dig in. Where did that epic journey start for you?
Well, first, I want to actually share what I mean by epic. Because when we hear it through what I'll say is a masculine construct of bigger than, better than, greater than, king of the hill, master of the universe. And that's not actually what the original word meant. The original word, epic, meant a long form story of daring do, daring to do, and daring to be. It's why people talk about the epic of Homer or the epic of Odysseus. So for me, this story of daring do started when I was 8. Well, actually, probably started earlier, but I think for everyone, and it'd be interesting, Nita, for you to think about it, like when was the first moment you remember picking your head up and realizing that there was a purpose greater than yourself, a story that was actually bigger than your story that you wanted to be a heroine in? So I'll tell you when it started for me, and then I'm curious when it started for you.
Yeah.
For me, I was 8 years old. It was 1960. We were in the middle of the Cold War, which was a real battle between the Soviet Union at the time and America. As a third grader, we were having atomic bomb drills. We were hiding under our desk or being asked to hide in our lockers as if that was going to protect you from an atomic bomb. And I was also very influenced by my mom, who was one of only two women in her law school class at the University of Chicago in the 1940s. Wow. So in 1960, when I was 8, she was running all sorts of great society programs, which were programs started by President Johnson, where we lived, the War on Poverty, the Crusade for Opportunity. So she already was my hero. And then John F. Kennedy running for president, and he said, ask not what your country can do for you.
Right.
Ask what you can do for your country. And he started the Peace Corps.
Right.
He asked everyone to get out and exercise.
Oh, wow.
He said we were going to the moon. And I was like, reporting for duty, sir. So that's when I realized that there was a story bigger than me, but it was calling for me to be a character in that story.
Well, Carolyn, I just want to kind of stop you because I think you're absolutely right in just reflecting that for myself. And what's coming up is, as you started, you said the masculine way is like bigger than, but really what you mean by epic is, you know, daring to be. It's almost like this intentionality of, I'm going to step forth, even in the midst of sometimes chaos, sometimes not believing in yourself, but daring to be. I think that is really powerful. That just landed in me as I just reflect in my own journey growing up with my immigrant parents in Chicago. And I think for me, it was like before I was probably maybe seven, because I had to have been in the first grade. And when you're sharing that story, I'm sharing, it was like a whole period of time where I would come home and I had just gotten my desk. And so I thought I was very official, that I was like a grown kid because I entered the first grade and my parents got me this desk. So I had my little crayons in one corner of the desk, you know, it was official. And I got a little paint set in watercolors. And so I would come home and I would paint every day. And for me, it was like, okay, one day I could possibly be a painter. And then of course, my immigrant dad was like, actually, no, you're not. You have to go study and do math. So my dream didn't really turn out that way, but I totally get, you know, where the idea of believing a different version of yourself, daring to be, because I dared to dabble in watercolor.
But think about it.
Yeah.
As little children,
mm-hmm.
We believe in the game of make-believe, that if you can believe you can make it happen.
Mm.
And why not? Now, I love that you call your podcast The Brave Table,
mm-hmm.
because what I love is the word courage. Courage comes from the root core, heart.
Yeah, yeah.
And it means to go forward with your heart in your mouth at times of doubt, fear, and uncertainty.
Mm.
And that's what really called to me, looking at my mother, looking at John F. Kennedy. They were courageous leaders going forth with their heart in their mouth in times of doubt, fear, and uncertainty.
Mm.
And that's what called to me. And that's why epic is daring, daring to be and do. So the farthest that I could think at 8 was 10 years later, at 18, when I was going to go to college.
Mm.
Well, I ended up on a path to studying languages and then studying Russian in college. And my first job was a diplomat in the Soviet Union when I was 21.
Wow.
Telling America's story to 10,000 Soviet citizens every day.
Oh, wow.
But that sort of came out of this idea at 8. And this idea that if I could believe it, I could make it happen. Mm-hmm. And that I had the agency to do that, even if you don't know how to make it happen.
Yeah.
So I've been playing that game. I'm now 70. So I play that game every 10 years and think about, okay, what do I want to dare to be and do in a way that helps me be the leader that I'm called to be at home, at work, and in the world?
Oh, gosh. Well, I love that it kind of alludes to the work that you do now, because, I mean, you at 70, that's incredible, because I feel like you're like a role model to me in terms of like how I want to show up in my vitality and my energy and how my contribution is. And take us through, because you actually help people rediscover and define the game they want to play, you know, in their best decade. So can you talk to us a little bit about that and how that actually came to be?
Yes. Well, you know, throughout my professional career, I was a diplomat, then I was an international banker, then a Wall Street banker, then a management consultant, a professor, a philanthropist. But I also was a daughter,
mm-hmm.
a sister, a wife, a mother, and now a grandmother of 8.
Wow.
So what I would say is I've had the opportunity to both play in a man's world in male-dominated industries, being sort of one of the first. But all the time I felt my real job was to sort of be an urban gorilla, like stirring the pot for women and historically underrepresented groups.
Wow.
In order for them to be all that they could be, because I saw them being undervalued, underappreciated, undersupported. And it began to hit me that women and historically underrepresented groups, every time they try to lean into their power, mm-hmm. connected to their purpose, they get pushed back
mm-hmm.
by the dominant power structure, whatever that might be.
Sure.
And that we have spent so much time compromising and navigating and putting so much energy into how will other people feel? Like, how will we make other people comfortable with us? And I began to share my decade game with just all the women I would work with. And I would have, I can't tell you, I used to have a progression when I was a partner at a large consulting firm. I would have a progression of really talented, really wonderful women coming into my office and finally saying, you know what, Carolyn, I don't think I want to be a partner. And my reaction was, oh, well, tell me about the partner you don't want to be. Because chances are, I don't want to be that partner either. And what I realize is that we all have this archetypal story of what leaders look like, act like, and behave like.
Right.
And that's fiction.
I love this so much because I even grown up, and I never met my grandfather, but I know that he was a diplomat in India to UNICEF. And that was such a big position that, and this was in India. And during the time of when they had just had the partition between India and Pakistan. And so he had a big role where he was constantly leaving his family for months on end. Like, my dad would tell us stories that he would never see his dad. My aunt would tell us stories like, you know, they shipped her off to boarding school at 10 years old. And, you know, as a woman, super young, she had a lot of trauma growing up, thinking her family didn't want her. But now on the other side, she's had like the best education because she learned Mandarin and how to fly a plane and like just like really interesting things back in the 60s in India to go to that kind of education and schooling. And I can only imagine, because my grandfather would go to the Middle East and he would go all of these different places. He did get to meet JFK actually. So kind of around that same time, probably when you were eight. And I think of, yeah, there's not very many women even to deal with that much, you know, masculine energy without then becoming a man. And just reflecting in my own life of being a dentist first, I remember I wanted to golf because the dentist, the predecessor before me, who was much older, he was probably in his 60s, I want to even say maybe early 70s when he retired and I got the practice from him and his partner, who was much younger, but they were men. They golfed with the guys. They belonged to the Wednesday Breakfast Club. And I didn't know any better. I didn't have any expanders as women who led dental offices. And I was just, all right, I want to do this. And I did this early on. And I did not look like how I did. I looked way younger. I looked like I was still in high school. So nobody took me seriously. So I felt like I had to button up, wear turtlenecks, wear blazers, literally dress like a man. I didn't want to wear makeup because that would show that, you know, oh my gosh, she's trying to look provocative. Like, I just had all these skewed ideas. And so for you to have such an accomplished career in so many avenues, it seems like every decade was so unique and different for you. But I love that you said, you know, kind of learning how to be in a man's world. How or where did you get your inspiration from to lead from a feminine place or not falling into the traps of the masculine way of leading?
Well, first of all, let me just say to all women and to men, we're all guilty and no one's to blame. We all got born into this story of white male hegemonistic paternalistic stuff. And we're all just doing the best that we can. So I just want to say that I think early on, actually, you know, I made a choice when I was eight. Not only was I inspired by JFK, but when I was 8 years old, and I do tell this story in a TED talk that I did a couple months ago.
Oh my gosh.
When I was eight,
amazing.
My parents put me on a plane by myself to travel to New York City to see my grandparents. I was super excited. Well, I was molested on that plane trip at eight. And I think about that. And by the way, I never told my parents. I never told anyone. The first person who I ever told about it was my husband when I was 60 years old. So I just want to let that land for a second. However, I made a choice at eight that I could either be the victim or the hero in my own story. And I decided to be the hero in my own story. Now, the fact that I couldn't tell anyone what I was going through and how I came to that is work that I've done a lot of work on. But I think that I share that story just to say that anyone who is not part of the dominant culture has experienced some kind of trauma of not being accepted for who they are, or being pushed back for who they are, or being in some way threatened, or feeling like that, and have had to make decisions about what story am I going to believe about who I am? Am I going to live in a story of shame or pain or confusion or victimhood? Or am I going to live in a different story? And so very early on, Nita, I had this sense with my decade game in hand that if I'm feeling anxious, if I'm feeling threatened, if I'm feeling scared, if I'm feeling resigned, if I'm feeling exhausted, it's because I'm playing someone else's game. But when I'm playing my game that's connected to a purpose larger than myself, I can deal with anything. You know, you can imagine I'm 70 years old. I've had my fair share, as all women do. You know, we are the birthers, the nurturers, and the mourners. And that's a special role that women play.
Wow. I love that you said that. The birthers, the nurturers, and the mourners. I have not heard it stated in that way before. That's huge.
It is huge. You know, I breathed my father out of this world. I breathed my late husband out of this world. And I breathed my children in. And when women can honor the fact that life has lots of ups and downs, but if you're playing your game and really being connected to your purpose, both as the birther, the nurturer, and the mourner, and as a courageous leader, someone who is willing to be of service for a purpose larger than herself or himself, you can get through anything. And not only can you get through it, you can thrive as opposed to just survive. Look, when I was 8, I wouldn't have been able to have any kind of conversation that would have described that. But when I think about my life and the fact that I am filled with joy and gratitude, even in difficult times, the fact that I know that every day I can discover meaning for myself and create meaning for someone else, that comes from those early stories that I decided to tell myself. And this is the thing I find with women. No matter where I go in the world, Nita, and I've spoken to women all over the world, I ask a question: who was raised to be a good girl? Raise your hand. Everyone knows what that means.
Yep.
Everyone knows what that means. Mm-hmm. But when good girls start experimenting with power and push outside the boundaries, they meet another character, and she's called Goldilocks. And she's told she's to this or to that and never just right. And that's what connects all of us together.
First, I just want to honor you for even laying this out on the Brave Table. I mean, I was just imagining you at 8 years old having to go on this plane by yourself and, you know, the excitement and the nervousness and then going through that sort of like confusing experience. I mean, I just got chills. And I feel like for our listeners, I kind of want to like dig into that a little bit more, because I, especially back in that day and age where talking about the uncomfortable is not even allowed. I feel like now we are just starting to normalize a lot of this through social media. We make memes about it. We make comedy specials about it. But back then, that was like hush hush. And so what were the initial steps or even how did that just impact in the way you showed up even to your family as a little girl?
Yeah, well, that's a big story. I'll share a couple things. First of all, let me just say that when I share that in a TED Talk that I did.
And we'll link the TED Talk, by the way.
Yeah. Even though it's in the book, it didn't occur to me that my sons would read the book. And then I did the TED Talk, and I'm coming back from the studio, and I thought, holy good God, my sons are going to hear that TED Talk. Now, my sons are in their mid to late 30s. And they each have our father's little girls.
Wow.
And in the TED Talk, I also talk about the fact that I never told my parents. And that gave me an amazing opportunity to call both my biological sons and let them know what's in that story, because they could hear it through the lens of new fathers,
yep,
of three-year-old daughters.
Mm.
And hear it through the lens of, if my child gets hurt, will she not come to me? So, and they asked me, Mom, why now? And I shared that I never told that story publicly until I started formally coaching women, because I know how many women have had an experience. And even if it's just emotional abuse, I just know it's an experience that is shared. And that for me to be able to see my tears in other people's eyes, as well as my joy in their eyes, is part of what the work is for women. To be able to share this, heal each other, while at the same time we heal ourselves.
Absolutely. It's almost like you're giving other women permission to begin that healing journey or even go deeper in that healing journey. And I love that you're sharing this in this way, in a TED Talk and even in your book. Yet for those listening who are inspired and who maybe have been carrying a secret for years, decades, maybe holding on to something and you have a lot of shame around it or guilt around it, and maybe this is the Brave Table. Maybe this is now that you get to journal it out. Maybe you get to say that part out loud, and maybe it's more cathartic for yourself to first acknowledge it within ourselves first, and then we start and we can share it with others. And I love that many times it can take decades and decades, or the fact that you started really understanding and owning it for yourself when you began the work coaching with other women. Isn't it so interesting? Because we have mirrors around us and that reflection, and almost to say, is it safe yet? Is it safe for me to share that yet? And it's so amazing to have somebody like yourself who's now leading groups of women who, you know, once there's a safe container, because many times we keep secrets in because we've never been modeled safety of, ooh, am I going to be judged? Are they going to talk bad about me? I don't know. I've just never been seen before. And I think, which is why I'm such a big advocate of women's groups and women's programs. And that's why I was so excited to have you on today to really dive into this conversation. And so I think this is like the perfect segue to get into your signature program of how you now work with women.
But before I do, let me just say, I love this conversation and I want to just acknowledge what you said, that sometimes it takes years. And that's okay too. And it is important to be able to find a safe place to share and to realize that you are not alone and to recognize that none of us are to blame for this. One of the things that I've learned in the last 10 years in the work I do by taking women deep into the Amazon jungle to learn from a deeper place.
Oh, wow.
Is that, the body learns, the heart then feels, and then the head interprets. I'm going to just say that again. The body learns first, the heart then feels, and then the head interprets. So for anyone who's listening, who's had a similar experience and hasn't had the opportunity to be able to share it, and I'm just saying, I'm not a therapist, I'm just sharing it from my own experience, that trauma lives in your body and that grief and shame and hurt lives in your heart until you can put it through the mind and tell a different story. Because your mind as a yet little girl would have been interpreted in the only way it could have at the time, which is be silent, don't share, you've done something wrong. It's the only way it could have interpreted at the time, because it would have made sense any other way. You didn't have the worldly understanding. And it's never too late to be able to move it out of your body. And the most wonderful thing is it can move quickly. It can move quickly. The other thing I will just share about secrets is it's important to have a safe space. And then it's important to be intentional about, why are you telling the secret? Will that be of service? Will that be generative? Will that create healing for everyone, both you and the people who hear it? And that's what leadership is.
It's so good. It's so good. And I'm guessing, what other nuggets can we expect from your book? Because I think everybody should have Epic on their book stand, order it, get it for another. We're celebrating Women's History Month this month. Get it for another woman that's important in your life. I'm going to link it in the show notes. You can get it on Amazon. And so perhaps maybe take us through one or two things that we can,
yes,
we can definitely glean.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, the book is part memoir about some of the things that I've learned, part manual, which is how to construct your own decade game, with lots of stories of women I've coached who have created the decade game so that you can actually see how different elements of the game board work. And then part manifesto, which is we are entering into an epoch, E-P-O-C-H,
that's
calling for women to be epic, to really connect to your essential self. I'm not asking for women to be different. I'm not asking for women to change. I'm asking for women to return to themselves. There's also in the book lots of rules of the game. Because again, as I said earlier, if you are anxious, exhausted, pissed off, angry, you're playing someone else's game. And so there's lots of tips and tricks around how to actually get back to your game so that you can actually create a life by design, not default. And to be able to dream big and bold, because one of the parts of the book that I'm talking about is based on the brain science, that again, if you can believe it and imagine it, your brain thinks you did it. That's why visioning is so important. And one of my favorite quotes is from the comedian Lily Tomlin, who said, I always knew I wanted to be someone. I just didn't know I had to be more specific. So I'm calling for women to be able to become an epic storyteller and learn how to tell a great story about themselves and know how to get back to that story quickly. Mm-hmm. When life gets in the way and another story hits you in the face, a story of I'm not enough or a story of I'm too much, to actually know that you are just right. And in the end, you know, I'm asking women to live every day in a way that's worth dying for, because that's in our power. And we have the power of the universe inside us. And even though it's called the decade game, what I want people to understand is you don't play it in the future, because you have everything you need right now. You don't have to learn anything new. You don't have to acquire anything new. You have everything you need to have a life of meaning and purpose and live that way every day. And that's epic.
So many gems of wisdom everywhere. So good. So good. So as we shift into our igniting round, the first question I want to ask is, you can go as fast or as slow as you want. How and what would you say now with all of this wisdom and all of this magic that you have created for yourself and among the various seasons of life that you've had? What would you say, or what advice would you give to that 8-year-old little girl?
That it's all about the quality of your presence, not your performance.
So good. And what are you braving currently at this stage and season of life?
Well, I have a new game for 80.
Can we hear it yet?
Yes, you can. So I firmly believe that the next decade is always the best decade yet. Part of the game is to come up with a Mad Lib. A Mad Lib is, you know, you get a story, but it doesn't have all the words in it. And then you add your own words and it comes out to be even a better story. And so the Mad Lib starts with, a decade from now, I will know myself and be known by the people who love me and the people who count on me as. And then you add an adjective, a subject, a verb, an object, and an outcome. So a decade from now.
Okay. Yep.
I will be known as a generational restorier, naming the dances that are longing to happen. And that's my job now, is to say yes to the experiences, knowledge, and relationships that allow me to get here from there.
Oh,
so that every day I can practice. Well, what would the generational restorier, naming the dances that are longing to happen, say or do now?
Naming the dances. Oh, generational restorier. Oh my goodness. You just gave us the biggest mic drop and the exercise that we can do for this month, this quarter. I think this is great. And I think for everybody that's listening, grab a girlfriend or two, grab Carolyn's book. I think we can all do it together. I'm all about creating book clubs now. And it's how we grow. We grow in community and we get to deepen our friendships and we get to create these bonds. And I love that you've just reframed, you know, the next decade will be the best decade yet, because so many people fear maturing and getting older, and you've just kind of shifted it on its head in so many ways to say, I'm embracing it. I'm calling forth even more X, Y, and Z. And there it goes back to the daring to be again. And I think that's so poignant. Thank you, Carolyn, for this incredible conversation. And one word that describes this season of life for you.
Exquisite.
Oh, amazing. And where can we find your decade game, your programs? How do we work with you? I bet so many people are just going to come and want to just have you in their corner with all of the amazing wisdom and all of your retreats that you do. So tell us everything.
Well, the best way to find me is go to mydecadegame.com. And there you can read about the decade game. And I do 2 masterclasses, 6-week masterclasses twice a year. And you can find out about that. And you can also check out the book and some of the things around the book and at epicwomensplaybook.com.
Oh,
and then
such
you can always
URL.
Find me. And you can always find me at Carolyn at mydecadegame.com. And if you find me, I promise I'll answer you.
Amazing. And we will link your TED Talk in the show notes, as well as where everybody can get a copy of Epic. And wow, such a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today, Carolyn. Until next time.
Welcome back to the other side. All right. Oh, wasn't that so refreshing? I'm just still in awe of our interview together. If you are so fascinated, you can totally connect with Carolyn Buckloose. She's like the executive coach I had when I was transitioning. You can contact her on LinkedIn. She's at Carolyn Buckloose, B-U-C-K-L-U-C-E. If you want to know more about the decade game, go to mydecadegame.com. It's fantastic. It's brilliant. You can go ahead and grab her book, The Women's Power Playbook. I think it's fascinating. And if you are rediscovering yourself in your work, in as you as a leader, whether you are at home, in corporate, in your own business, that is one of the books that you should definitely have and that should live on your nightstand. And you can go to epicwomensplaybook.com. That's epicwomensplaybook.com to work with her and to see her next cohort of coaching. Now, if you've loved this episode, go ahead and share it with a friend, share it with a colleague, share it with somebody that you love that could use a little bit more inspiration and motivation, especially as we are getting into a different season. And I hope you are having the best day, the best week, and I hope you do something a little special for yourself and maybe have a brave conversation today and maybe brave in yourself of what is going on for you and what are you feeling into in this season of life. And if you haven't already, go ahead and leave us a 5-star review. If you love this episode, if this episode has changed your life in the way you think, or perhaps maybe helping you brave certain storms in your life right now, go ahead and leave us a 5-star review. We are so, so, so thankful. It helps us get into the hands and the ears of more listeners. So with that being said, I hope you have an incredible evening, day, night, and don't forget to be a little bit more brave. I will see you soon.